consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives.
I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
Welcome to Tech Sequences. In 1952, a young physicist named Norman F. Ramsey was studying the peculiar behavior of atomic particles. This study would lay the groundwork for quantum sensing as he conceived the idea of using atomic clocks for precision timekeeping. But his research would end up revolutionizing everything from navigation to telecommunications. For this work, he was posthumously awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1989. Ramsey's insight marked the dawn of a new era in sensing technology. By harnessing the delicate principles of quantum mechanics, scientists began to explore the possibility of creating sensors with unprecedented sensitivity and accuracy. Over the decades that followed, researchers made significant strides in understanding and manipulating quantum phenomena, paving the way for the development of a wide array of quantum sensors. Aside from AI, this technology is poised to revolutionize virtually every aspect of our world. Quantum's distinctive capacity to process vast amounts of data is already optimizing the paths of countless fuel tankers worldwide, prioritizing the care of ICU patients, and simulating chemical reactions at the atomic scale to enhance material design. Today, quantum sensors are deployed in fields as diverse as medical imaging, environmental monitoring, and national security, offering insights into the world around us that were once unimaginable. Moreover, quantum sensing has the potential to significantly enhance artificial intelligence by powering algorithms to effectively train, ultimately paving the way for the realization of autonomous vehicles like driverless cars and drone taxis. But for all their promise, quantum sensors are not without their challenges and controversies. One pressing issue is a practical implementation of these delicate instruments outside controlled laboratory environments. Can quantum sensors withstand the rigors of real-world use? And what about the potential for misuse or abuse, particularly in the realms of surveillance and national defense? Moreover, there are fundamental questions about the nature of quantum sensing itself. How do quantum sensors achieve such remarkable levels of sensitivity? And what are the limits of their capabilities? These are just some of the questions that continue to intrigue and inspire scientists as they push the boundaries of what's possible in the realm of sensing technology.
Our guest today is retired Colonel Jen Svoboda. Jen is the president of Sandbox AQ's global public sector, focused on government issues at the nexus of quantum and AI to help solve problems that are not possible with classical computing today. Prior to her position at Sandbox AQ, she was the Chief Futures Officer and Senior Vice President General Manager for the intelligence community startup Mission Tech Solutions, which was acquired by Avantis Federal in November 2020. She is the winner of Innovation Leader and 2023 Fed 100 Prize. Prior to this, Jen's Air Force career spanned 25 years in intelligence focused on higher-end technological capabilities, where she held various positions in operational tests, systems interoperability, and requirements definition. She commanded the Air Force Technical Applications Center, the DoD's sole organization responsible for nuclear treaty monitoring. Jen also serves as the chairwoman of the Board of Directors for the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum, a member of the Board of Directors for the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, and as a strategic advisor to Bluestone Investment Partners. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you both having me on.
Let's start with what's going to be the hardest question probably of the whole discussion. We need to have a basic understanding of quantum sensing. So in simple terms, can you describe what the technology is, how it works?
Yeah, so quantum sensing is just like any other sensing capability that you have out there that looks at different phenomena and then tries to collect the information. What makes it different and unique is that it uses a sensor that exhibits quantum properties. But what most people don't realize is that quantum sensors have been around for a very, very, very long time. The first known recorded quantum sensor, or using quantum sensing, is actually from the 1600s, when Galileo used pulses and matched it with the swinging of a pendulum in the Pisa Cathedral. And so quantum sensing has been around for a long time. And with him, each heartbeat was the approximate match of one swing. And so that was the concept of the tick rate and time that we use for atomic clocks today. And atomic clocks today are what enable us to have such precision with our GPS, with everybody's cell phone having the exact same time on it, but as well as your car and every other device that you have. And so quantum sensing is something that is continually grown and expanded and modernized. Things like transistors and lasers and MRI machines that we all go and get these big, huge sensing and visual pictures of what's going on inside our bodies are all quantum sensors. And those have been around since the 50s to the 70s and are still used today. And what is different about sensing now is that we now have increases in sensitivity. We have the ability to have the data be more reliable, as well as be able to collect the data more efficiently and effectively, and even do things that are out of the ordinary, that would be perceived as out of the ordinary, such as at room temperature, rather than having to be in a cold room like an MRI where you need four blankets to keep you warm.
So you've mentioned some of the current applications of quantum sensing technology. Can you describe potentially some future applications of the technology?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really boundless. There are so many different things that we can do. We can do everything from chip sensing and identifying the anomalies in a chip. For example, if we know that there might be rogue circuitry inside of a chip, because chips are so small and so microscopic and have all of these components that are put together, we now can scan a chip and see where that rogue circuitry or maybe even bad circuitry is. If you've ever bought a new device and it knocks out after the first, 2 weeks and you're wondering what in the world just happened, oftentimes it's because the chip failed. So you can look at that chip failure and see if it's possibly going to happen because a circuit didn't get connected properly. You can also do biological sensing. So I did mention an MRI, but we also now are looking at how do we look at the brain, the heart, and the nerve for medical purposes. One of the things that you might look at is sensing your brain and looking at all of the connections of the neurons that are in there that enables us to map the brain early on in someone's life to maybe look at future applications of how do we attack and cure Alzheimer's. Another thing is looking at how do we use sensors to detect what's under the ground. And that might be for nuclear treaty monitoring, where people doing nuclear tests. It might also be looking for mineral deposits for things like lithium or other minerals that are vital to modern technology and emerging technology. We also have the ability for navigation and how navigation systems can be more accurate and enable us to navigate without GPS. And there's so many other applications out there that I could go on for a long time, but those are the main ones.
Some of them you already alluded to, which is the potential for quantum sensing, the potential it has for military intelligence. Who else is using it, and who is really ahead in this technology in terms of military uses?
Yeah, so for the military usage, the main thing that people are looking at for quantum sensing is really that quantum navigation capability. For example, just yesterday, there was an article in the BBC that said that the Israelis have been jamming GPS over Israel because of the threat from Hamas, or perceived threat from Hamas and Hezbollah for rocket launches and other things. And what has happened is not only did it impact what may come into Israel, but it also is impacting commercial airline flights, military airline flights, as well as people's ability to navigate in their own vehicles. So this is something that is not going to go away with GPS and will continue to expand. Russia's doing it over the Ukrainian areas. We're seeing it with China in Taiwan and off the coast of Australia. And as GPS jammers continues to get more and more powerful, we'll probably see that extended even broader than what we're currently seeing today. And so with GPS enabled capabilities, we need to have an alternative so that we can still navigate safely. We have freedom of the seas, freedom of the air, and we can do this through using quantum sensors.
I guess I'm curious to understand a little bit more about how you can use quantum sensing for navigation. I mean, I guess when you say that, I'm thinking we must then like make maps of, the seafloor, if you will, in ways we haven't been able to, but I'm probably way off base there.
Yeah, so the easiest way to talk about this is actually using magnetometry. So quantum magnetometry, where you use a quantum sensor to detect that magnetic field of the Earth. So the crustal field of the Earth is based off of a magnetic field that comes from the core of the Earth. So the very center of the Earth emanates a magnetic field, which then when it comes to the core of the Earth, all of the structures of the Earth then create a map, like you just said, Leslie, where you build a magnetic map. It's not the polar fields, which are the ones on the ends of the Earth, because those transition and shift and shape and sometimes will flip. But the crustal field is actually very consistent. And with that map, you could now have a quantum sensor that detects the magnetic field over the area where you're flying. And you can overlay the map that you already have created with the map that you're collecting. And you can now determine where you are in time and space.
Very cool.
You mentioned healthcare as one of the areas. You know, we have EKG right now and MRI. Does MRI, are MRI machines using quantum sensing, or is this quantum sensing technology going to somehow make MRI machines or other types of healthcare machines a lot more sensitive and a lot, perhaps even more accessible to people?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. So one of the things that we're developing is an MCG. So it's a magnetocardiography device. So it's that magnetic sensing again. And if we think about an EKG, where it detects the electrical field of your heart instead of the magnetic field of your heart, you can see what's going on inside of your body by sensing that electrical field. And what happens is you have to put all of the sensors in specific spots around your body. If you've ever gone to the hospital because you've had chest pains or your arm doesn't feel well, or you just don't feel well overall, and they take you in to have you hooked up to the machine to see what's going on with your heart, you have to have a specialist who knows how to do that. What we now have is we have the ability to look at the magnetic field of your heart, which is more sensitive. And the device, instead of having to be attached to your body, is actually passive, meaning there's no connections or leads. So any technician could put it over the top of your heart, detect that magnetic field, and then from there, we have the ability to see more with more sensitivity what is going on with that magnetic field. So an EKG usually gets you to the point where your arteries are already clogged and you're possibly in a heart attack type of an environment. If the EKG can't pick it up, you then typically have to wait for an MRI. And that MRI is a lot more expensive. It's not in every hospital that you have out there. It's not in every clinic. It's so remote, and underserved and underprivileged communities often don't have access to MRIs. And it also has to be cryogenically cooled, which means cooled to very low temperatures, and it has to be shielded from the magnetic field of the Earth. So when you go into those MRI machine rooms, they're usually in the basement of the hospital, they're super cold, and there's a big door that has to close before you can start your MRI. And that's because the magnetic field of the Earth interferes with the signal that comes out of the MRI. So with this magnetocardiography device, it's portable. It doesn't have to be cryogenically cooled, so it operates at room temperature. And it also doesn't have to be shielded from the Earth. So you don't have to have it in a specific room. You can take the device to the patient in the hospital bed, or you can take it to a clinic and have it just sitting in the open, which now enables us to have more accessibility. It allows us to have preventative care instead of care that happens after you're already at a point where you are on the verge of a heart attack or already in process of having a heart attack. And it's less expensive.
So I appreciate that we've sort of been bouncing from the global scale of navigation to the, you know, the micro scale of what can you detect in the human body. But I'm sort of getting the picture that of all of these magnetic fields that exist around us on both scales, on all scales, of which we are generally completely oblivious. And I'm wondering sort of what other things are sort of on the horizon, I guess, in terms of things, new things that we might be able to do with this kind of sensing that we haven't done with other, what we can call traditional methods before.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'd like to just bring up prior to that, you sort of mentioned that there's these magnetic fields all over, and there are. And so one of the things that we also have to do is we have to marry up artificial intelligence with these quantum sensors, because we have to take that extra signal out, all right. Of the other magnetic fields out. So if you're flying in an aircraft, for example, and you have a quantum magnetometer that's doing navigation. There's also the magnetic signature of the aircraft. There's the magnetic signatures of the watch on your wrist, of the phone in your pocket, of all of the other electronics on the system. So you have to be able to use artificial intelligence to say, what is the signal I'm actually looking for versus what's noise that's creating a disturbance? And then being able to subtract out that noise so you just get to the signal that matters. And so that's one of the things that's really key to this technology and is made it possible because of the advances that we've had in artificial intelligence, as well as in quantum sensing over the last several years to a decade or so. And so to your question about what are some of the other things that can happen, it's really anything that has a magnetic signature, we can now think about collecting. And it's just understanding and characterizing what that magnetic signature looks like for the thing that you're looking to do. So, for example, if you're in a small aircraft, it has a different magnetic signature from a large aircraft that carries cargo. If you're in a car, it has a different magnetic signature than a ship. And we just need to understand what the baseline magnetic signatures are and then the use case of what you're trying to do. And then we can work on solving those problems.
Let me get to the question of standards, because there's all of these different applications. You mentioned all of these different countries who are working on various technologies related to this. So is there a set of standards related to this? And if so, who's working on it? And where in the process are these standards?
Yeah, so there isn't really a standards body that's looking at this holistically from a quantum sensing perspective. People are talking about quantum standards or quantum, how do we figure out how to share capabilities and make things interoperable? And where do we limit technological sharing from the perspective of national security or IP concerns or other things along those lines? But the standards themselves haven't been set. A lot of the standards get set from sort of the other side, which is the use case perspective. So from a navigation perspective, you need to have, GPS is down to, micrometers almost as far as where you are here versus in the next house over. But navigation with a magnetometer and quantum magnetometer may be 100 meters or 200 meters of accuracy. So the standards are, if you're going to use it for flight, you need to be able to get to a place that enables that safety of flight. Same thing for what you can detect in a medical device. Those medical devices have to be regulated and they have to go through approvals through in the United States, the FDA, for example. So they're setting some of the standards from a device perspective or a use case perspective. But there also needs to be standards that are set from a safety perspective or from how are they created and built and shared. And NIST, of course, is obviously an organization that does a lot of standards, and they're looking at quantum as one of those things that needs to be talked about and see where we need to go, as well as other international bodies like the EU or NATO's even talking about quantum. So there's a lot that's going on, but it's very nascent at this point in time.
So NIST is working on some standards in the US, but NIST is a US organization. You mentioned some of the other ones like NATO, but they're not necessarily standards organizations per se. So do we need an international body to agree on a set of standards or, let's say, an operating behavior amongst various nationalities and countries?
Yeah, I think that some good examples. So ETSI, of course, is the European standards body that does a lot of standards, and ETSI and NIST work very closely together. We've seen over the last several years, probably 5 to 7 years, that NIST has really tried to pull in international collaboration regarding standards. One of those is a quantum adjacent technology called post-quantum cryptography, which is the next version of cryptography. And NIST did a worldwide, I call it a competition, where they asked for people to provide what they think the next standard is going to be and provide the algorithms and standards that they want to have evaluated. And NIST, as a standards body, has evaluated those. And many of the organizations worldwide and nations worldwide are waiting for NIST to set the standards, even though they are a US standards body, because this was such a collaborative international process. So I don't know if we necessarily need to establish a new standards body, but we at least need to figure out how do we collaborate together, especially with experts from ETSI and NIST and all of these other standards bodies that exist globally, to create something that is meaningful, that has standards, but maybe isn't too restrictive.
So you mentioned a moment ago about the importance of compute power and AI or big data technology to actually subtract out the undesired magnetic signals from the ones that you're actually trying to follow. What implications does that have in terms of, like, effectively scale of device that can be used? You mentioned before that in medical applications, having a small sensor to sense around the heart, but is that feasible today? And or what kind of physical scale of devices are we talking about now and in the near future?
Yeah, so surprisingly enough, it doesn't take a lot of compute power to do this. It just takes the algorithms to do it. And so it's not like having a large language model where you need an entire data center in order to get the insights that you're trying to look for. Because these are sensing at a different scale, you can have a device that's the size of a deck of cards that can do onboard processing and actually get to the data that you need. Same thing with the magnetocardiography device. It's the one that we have right now, which is a prototype, is not any larger than about a 1 foot by 1 foot device that is attached to a computer, but it's just a laptop computer. It doesn't need anything that's large as far as the scale goes, which is really nice because it makes it accessible to not only, you know, large aircraft manufacturers, if we're talking about navigation, but also people who might want to use it at some point in time to go hiking or to drive in their vehicles, as well as when you're looking at communities that want to have preventative healthcare, you don't want to have a device that's super expensive and that causes a lot of extra costs, as in electricity or compute or, you know, cloud storage or other things like that. So this enables it to be accessible for more than just the elite.
So I guess as a follow-up to Leslie's question, what is, you already mentioned where some of these quantum sensing technologies is already being deployed, for example, to make sure that all of our phones, all of our clocks are running at the same time. But how are there other types of consumer devices that we could see quantum sensing be deployed within? And if so, what would they be? Or are they already here?
Yeah, I think that we could look at a lot of different types of biological sensors. So we've talked, you know, specifically about the magnetocardiography device. There are other devices that we could have that could look at brain activities, nerve, blood, et cetera, as things continue to become more sensitive. And as we start to learn more about how all of those functions in our bodies continue to work. Other devices that are out there, I think that there's probably things we haven't thought of yet, especially as technology continues to move and modernize. I think that if we would have said, hey, we're going to do quantum navigation in a device that's, you know, the size of a bread box, and it's going to be pretty darn close to GPS. If we would have said that 5 years ago, people would have laughed at us. And the technology is, you know, advancing so much right now that we're making leaps and bounds every day.
So it sounds to me like with these consumer devices and some of the things you talked about before, which was sort of preventative medicine, it looks to me like that we do have a future where we can have consumer wearables and have some of this technology already incorporated, so we can get to more of a preventative medicine practice as opposed to what we currently have, which is, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we wait and wait until the last possible moment, and then it's sort of mitigating the harms as opposed to preventing the harms to begin with. Am I on the right track with this?
Yes, I think that that is exactly the right thing to think about. What I like to think about is the blood pressure cuff that's at the pharmacy. And people go and they sit down, they take their own blood pressure, and they're like, okay, my blood pressure is good, or well, maybe not, maybe I need to go see my doctor. I think the same thing could happen with the magnetocardiography device, where instead of putting your arm in a blood pressure cuff, you just sit behind a sensor, and it gives you a diagnostic that says, hey, by the way, we're starting to see a blockage. Why don't you go get it checked out by your cardiologist or your primary care doctor? And I think that what this does is it creates accessibility that doesn't exist today, especially in more modern technology. A lot of people can't afford MRIs, for example, or they can't even afford to go to the ER because of lack of medical insurance. And so for them to be able to do sort of their own diagnostics before they spend the money or think about what the implications are for their health, that, you know, it could be world changing.
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of different tests coming along to try to prevent the need for all of the invasive and expensive test treatments that we get. I mean, all the things that you, all the joys that you get to experience after the age of 50 of the, you know, every 10 years get a colonoscopy or whatever. Now there are blood tests to try to see if there are signatures in the blood to see if there's any reason to pursue a more invasive and complete test. So, I mean, I hear what you're describing as being in that same vein. I hope that that means that there are things that we're going to be able to detect that we don't currently have a better methodology for foreseeing, because this is effectively about being able to map out and see things. So are there health issues that we aren't capable of diagnosing now? Because the only way to actually get in and explore the area of concern is really only feasible post-mortem.
Yeah, I think a couple examples would be something like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. You know, that isn't something that we know exists until we see the degeneration that happens and we see the effects of what happens. But if there's a portable brain scanner or a portable brain scanner, even instead of a, you know, one that you actually wear, what we could see the changes over time of the brain and how the neurons are firing and how things are interacting before it happens. And when you combine that, as Alexa had mentioned about simulation, if we start looking at simulating molecules of how different compounds interact with our biological body much faster than we do with traditional drug discovery, we can now combine the information that we see in those brain scans with what we're seeing with drug interactions. And the power of both quantum technologies enables us to even accelerate how we could have preventative care and curative care potentially.
And maybe even avoid some really negative drug interactions as well and allergies.
That's right.
Wow, it sounds like this technology has a lot of wonderful uses. But what about the potential of abuse? In other words, a lot of times when Leslie and I cover very new technologies or sort of groundbreaking technologies, we talk about the wonderful things that it's potentially capable of, but there's also some downside. And that downside, and Leslie can correct me if I'm wrong, but almost to a T, comes down to humans using the technology in a way that perhaps it wasn't intended, or it's being used in a way that misused practically. So are there misuses of this technology that you've seen already, or can you conceive of some potential misuses?
Yeah, so I haven't seen any misuses yet, but a potential is that, for example, in quantum navigation, the capability when you use a quantum magnetometer is that because it is able to be used in the day and in the night in all weather conditions, and it's passive, which means that you don't actually emanate anything, you're only collecting the signal from the Earth, it could be used to launch missiles that can't be detected or have aircraft that can't be detected. That could potentially, if you're trying to, you know, if you're looking at the Russia-Ukraine world, the Ukrainians wouldn't know that a missile was incoming and they couldn't have countermeasures or tell their people that they need to take cover to protect themselves. And so with any technology, there's the opportunity for misuse. I think from a medical device perspective, there's always a concern too about how medical information is used for good or for evil, and whether or not we're really looking at it from the perspective of, are we aiding in the science or are we looking for alternatives to make things even worse? And as you start to be able to collect more and more data and you start to put more data together, you now get to more comprehensive either solutions or counter solutions to some of the severe medical conditions that are out there.
So you've mentioned signatures in a couple of cases, and I appreciate that, you know, you're thinking of signatures of, say, an aircraft versus the crust magnetic signature. But Are these magnetic signatures potentially unique to the level of individuals? So is one of the potential applications of the technology to really be able to identify this person or some other characteristic?
You know, I haven't actually thought through that, but my guess is probably, you know, everybody has a different wavelength that they give off. I think, you know, depending on height, depending on how your body composition is, even depending on, you know, what color your eyes are, or maybe the color of your hair, you know, because different, you know, lighter hair might reflect more than darker hair, which absorbs. So I think it's a potential that you could potentially, maybe, you know, probably not in the next 5 to 10 years, but in the future, as these get more and more precise, actually do signature mapping to people. Yeah.
Wild. I'll be sure to make myself a tinfoil hat before that becomes a thing.
Right.
That definitely gives off Minority Report vibes, you know, and leads me down the path of surveillance and whatnot. But a lot of this technology, it sounds to me, maybe because we've been exploring the medical aspect of it, has really enormous potential for bringing the complex medical diagnostics down to the consumer, to the individual level and the consumer level, and making it much more affordable and earlier on as an intervention rather than later on as a mitigation. Yeah. Are there any other sort of key things that we haven't discussed that you think the audience ought to know?
I think the biggest thing to know is that it's an exciting field and there are a lot of potential benefits to it, and be on the lookout for them. You know, you're going to start seeing different devices in emergency rooms as these devices start to get tested, for example. And then eventually, hopefully, you'll see them in your pharmacy or in your primary care doctor facility. And then, as you were mentioning, Alexa, that wearable device that might be the one that's over your heart that doesn't actually, you don't have to have it implanted, but it's detecting on a day-to-day basis if you have anomalies in your heartbeat, that it's detecting it and looking at it on a daily basis to really provide that preventative care.
Someone should tell Elon Musk about that with Neuralink, that maybe not to implant something in the brain, but rather have it sit on top, like not a tinfoil hat, but another type.
Well, it's clearly an exciting technology area, and we'll look forward to hearing more in the coming years. But for now, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a great conversation, and I love talking about this.
Thank you, Jen. It shows.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.